Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I've got a really big announcement coming up in just a couple of minutes' time. I'm really excited about being able to tell you this. We will do that here in a few minutes. Before we get to that, as a way of kicking off the week, I've had a couple thoughts kicking around in my head about the Georgia defense as of late. And this is really based on three things. The first thing is, you know, on Thursday afternoons, we do the Cover 4 video broadcast. That's the entire Dog Nation team, at least the ones you read and see the most on the Dog Nation website. Myself, Mike Griffith, Connor Riley, our recruiting insider, Jeff Sintel. And we kick around topics. One of the topics we dealt with on this past Thursday show, you can check it out on the Dog Nation Facebook or YouTube pages, was the breakout player for this upcoming season. And what I try to define breakout as, and it's so funny, you know, all of us doing this kind of stuff, we have just different viewpoints in these things. But what I try to tell these guys is, hey, if you're defining breakout, this isn't under the radar player. This isn't, hey, guy who quietly might make some noise. This isn't any of that. This is, who is the guy who really steps up and becomes one of the best players in this team? And if Georgia is as good as we think it can be, one of the best players in the Georgia team is probably in line to be thought of as one of the best players in the country, a household name, a very famous player with the rest of the SEC fan bases, with the rest of the college football fan bases by the end of the season. Who is that guy for Georgia? And I think that for me, if I had to identify that person for me, I think that there's a trio of guys that from that group, one of those guys really emerging to me is the safest possible bet of all. And then all three of them happen to be on defense. I would say it's N'Kobe Dean, the linebacker, Nolan Smith, the outside linebacker, and Trayvon Walker, the defensive lineman. On the show we did Thursday, I kind of made my case for N'Kobe Dean, but the truth is, on a different day, maybe I could talk myself more into Nolan Smith, or certainly I've touted Trayvon Walker in a big way. But I think between that trio of former elite signees from the 2019 class, one of those guys is probably on the verge of emerging as a superstar, maybe even better during his junior season, but we could see some real flashes from one of those three guys this upcoming year. Now, I think that alone is enough to make the Georgia defense really exciting, and I think that alone is enough to make this Georgia defense really a pretty entertaining product, whether we're lucky enough to be inside a stadium seeing it this fall, or if we have to watch it on TV because of social distancing, whatever else. I just think, you know, the trio of rising sophomores who have the potential to be true superstars at the college football level, that ought to make the product incredibly entertaining. However, that's not the only thing for me that makes the Georgia defense really fun to watch for this upcoming year. Because concurrent to some of these young players getting ready to really explode on the scene in a big way, I think you've got a couple of veteran presences on this team that may have a chance to really make a name for themselves in a continued way there as well. And this, I think, is just as fun as the Nolan Smith, Trayvon Walker, N'Kobe Dean conversation. What the veteran player, what the guys who've been here for a while do. One of those is probably Quay Walker, and one of the things that led me to think more about Quay Walker is the fact that the Pro Football Network is touting Walker as a potential NFL draft pick, maybe even a second round pick for Walker this upcoming season. They had some real nice things to say about him. Let me read just a little bit of this, what Pro Football Network says about Quay Walker, that he's an experienced linebacker, and where that shows up most is when he's asked to play in zone coverage. It's one thing to be told see ball, get ball. It's another thing entirely to have to drop to a spot, diagnose what's happening, and then react. That's where Walker needs the most development. At times he looks completely lost when he dropped back in zone coverage. However, he's athletic enough to, once he figures it out, but that won't necessarily be true at the next level. However, they go on to say that because he's so athletic that it, you know, you get better in that coverage, that you can see his stock rising, that he should become a more active participant on defense, clean up zone coverage woes. He could actually sneak into the second round of the 2021 NFL draft. So pretty high praise for Quay Walker from the Pro Football Network. And it kind of reminds me of the way in which Georgia fans have been kind of waiting for a big explosive moment like that from Quay Walker since he first came to Georgia. And really, you know, a very similar story for another linebacker in that 2018 class, Channing Tindall. And when you think about those recent five-star signees who could be ready to do some big things for Georgia this upcoming season, I think something else that ought to make the Georgia defense really fun to watch and really intriguing to see how all of this unfolds once games begin are the guys who've now been here for a while, like those rising juniors from the 2018 class. Do they, in a draft eligible year for themselves, also explode on the scene? And do they also help contribute to what could be and should be a very successful Georgia defense? In the case of Walker in particular, and as I mentioned, Channing Tindall, it's important to know what has been said about them all along. The folks at Pro Football Network saying, oh, we haven't seen enough from him in coverage yet. We haven't seen as much of him on the field yet as we'd like to. You know, go back to when these guys first got signed. Walker along with Channing Tindall. Go back to what Kirby Smart was saying about them then at that time. We saw the flashes of the athleticism. We saw the evidence that what made them such elite recruits. And now they have been in the program a little longer. Walker in particular, because that's the guy that the website's touting as a draft pick. When you think about what they came to Georgia already knowing how to do, when you think about how they couple that with the experience they've gained, maybe this is a big year for those guys coming into this upcoming season as a way of refreshing your memory about what was said when they were first signed, what was said when Walker and Tindall started going through practices for the first time. Let's go back to 2018 and hear Kirby Smart for a moment.
I know this, the two young guys, they don't know what to do. They make busts, they make mistakes, but Channing Tindall and Quay Walker are fighting tooth and nail because, number one, they can run and they'll hit you. Two qualities at linebacker. Can you run and will you hit somebody? They have done that well in camp. They don't know our defense completely inside and out, but we're not looking at week one. We're looking at week 4, 5, and 6. Two young guys are really competing.
So when they first arrived, Kirby Smart said Quay Walker, who the Pro Football Network highlighted, and Channing Tindall, who very similar player from the 2018 class, I know these guys can run. I know these guys can hit. And now they're experienced. And so when you're thinking about big, explosive growth years for N'Kobe Dean, Nolan Smith, Trayvon Walker, more heralded recruits that have arrived at Georgia more recently, make some room for some of those veterans as well, including a guy like Quay Walker, continuing to make a name for himself this upcoming season. Then finally, the other thing that I saw on the internet a lot over the course of the weekend got shared a good bit. Pro Football Focus had that graphic of rushing touchdowns allowed over the course of last season. Georgia only gives up 2, putting it right there at the top of the country in terms of that stat from a year ago. And it's another reminder of what the brand of the Georgia defense is coming into this season. And I've, as much as anyone, have talked about what we need to see more of from the Georgia defense: more sacks, more tackles for loss, more impactful plays behind the line of scrimmage. But the time we spend talking about that shouldn't be at the expense of talking about what this group already does well. The rush defense was a huge improvement for Georgia in 2019 compared to where it had been in 2018. In a time in the sport where it seems like physicality means less than it used to, the fact that Georgia still has an incredible physical brand, the kind of team that's going to be stingy at the line of scrimmage with rushing touchdowns allowed and yards allowed and things of that nature, that's a pretty cool brand for Georgia to have attached to its program right now. And to know that it's contributed, what contributes to that brand are some of the young players that I mentioned before who could explode onto the scene as big-time superstars, and guys from that 2018 signing class who could really come into their own and maybe change the reputation that class has among Georgia fans. I think that's all equaling up to something really fun. Ultimately, Georgia's national championship story may be told by how much it improves offensively, but what it doesn't need to improve on defensively because of how good it already is, that's an important thing for fans to think about and remember as we head towards the upcoming season. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. We are really glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. Just really appreciate you being a part of the program. We appreciate our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia for making it all possible. You know, they can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. And that's really important. It can improve the curve appeal of your home, which could add to the resale value. At a time of year when we're keeping the air conditioning on a lot more, the last thing you want is that expensive AC creeping out the sides, the crevices of your windows or underneath your door. More energy efficient windows and doors keeps that energy inside your house, which over the long run could save you money in your bills. All the more reason why it's really good to do business with Pella Window and Door of Georgia. And if you need another reason, how about these great savings? Between now and June 4th, you can get 50% off qualifying installations or 0% financing for 48 months. So reach out and get in touch with my friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia today. They're super easy to get in touch with, and you can have a contactless meeting, you know, through video teleconference. Very easy now, modern times, to maintain social distancing. Pella Window and Door of Georgia makes that easy. Find them online at PellaBranch.com. That's PellaBranch.com, or give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom. Here's the number I want you to use. It's 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia, they are viewed to be the best. Okay, I told you a moment ago, I have a really big announcement I want to be able to make, and let me do this for you real quick here. It has been a blast doing Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door, from the comfort of my own home for however long we've been doing it. And you guys have all been gracious to show up and be a part of our radio show or our podcast or our video show. But simultaneous to all this, I've been chomping at the bit for things to get back to normal. And I'm excited to say that on Wednesday, we are getting back to normal. We are back in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios doing the full show live at 10 a.m., still podcast and radio for those of you that prefer that version of it. But to be able to do everything simultaneous again is just a huge boost to our product. And for the video audience, they've had the toughest time getting acclimated to not having the regular content. So I'm really excited about delivering that to them starting this Wednesday at our normal time of 10 a.m. Podcast radio, you shouldn't notice much of a difference. If anything, the podcast will just get delivered earlier again. I know we've been delivering that a little later just because of the recording process. So that's going to be really fun. You know, this weekend was great, right? A lot of sports. I watched a ton of sports. It felt like a real sports weekend, although some sports maybe I haven't paid as much attention to before. I was watching German soccer. I watched the UFC event on Saturday night. I thought ESPN did a great job with that. I'm a golf fan, a NASCAR fan anyway. I enjoyed those events yesterday. Of course, the Jordan Dock closing out last night. It just sort of felt like a sports weekend. We're working our way back to normal, for the good or for the bad on that topic. We are heading that direction. And the next step in that process is Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, back in studio on Wednesday. So I can't wait to be a part of that. We're going to get John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a minute. Before I bring on John, though, speaking of the Last Dance documentary, let me do one thing on this before we get there. I've told you before, and it concluded last night, it's been an amazing TV product. I've enjoyed watching it. But I've told you before that I think a lot of people have seen what Jordan has done or what he did do back then, the way that it's been laid out over the course of these last few Sundays, and they're using it as a template for a leadership style. That this is what successful leadership looks like, and I think you've got to be careful doing that. You know, John Gordon, the leadership guru, he's even written about this, that what Jordan did worked for Jordan, but it's not necessarily going to work for everybody else unless you are Michael Jordan. I think that's a really, you know, important point to bring up. And I've said on the show that I think in terms of college football, what we expect from our coaches, the Jordan style put on display in The Last Dance actually doesn't work anymore, because we live in a time now where you've got freedom to move around, that coaches have more coaching opportunities. They will leave a program if they're not happy. Players have the ability to transfer. No matter how much you favor or don't favor the more liberal transfer rules, they are seemingly on their way to college football in some form or fashion. You know, the Jordan style of in-your-face intensity 24 hours a day, when people have a choice about being somewhere else, a lot of other people will just make a choice to go somewhere where it's not quite so unpleasant all the time. And I think you see an example of that at Alabama. And I think it's interesting that with all that in mind, that, you know, like everybody else seems to try to right now, getting involved in the Last Dance talk, I thought it was interesting that Alabama's Twitter account put out a clip of Michael Jordan and a response from Nick Saban. Take a listen to this.
If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
You know, I think one of the reasons that I have so much respect for what we just heard was this sort of defines the ultimate competitor, the ultimate sacrifice that you have to make to win, the ultimate sacrifice that you have to make to be a leader. It probably explains, you know, what we've tried to accomplish here in this program by what we try to bring out in our players, which is to help them be the best version of themselves as people, as students, and as players, and get people to aspire to be the very best that they can be. That's all we've ever tried to do here. And I've never heard anybody articulate it any better than what Michael Jordan did, because of the kind of competitor he was.
So listen, I think that it's not a surprise that Nick Saban really enjoys that. And I think that you can say something similar about Saban that you say about Jordan. Jordan's style worked really well in the 1990s, but as a template for college football coaching in 2020, I don't think it's such a good fit. Same thing for Saban. When Saban first started building his program in Alabama in 2007, the college football world looked dramatically different than it looks now. If Saban were trying to build that program from scratch starting today, the way that he built it in 2007, I don't think he would have as much success. And for as much as I revere Michael Jordan and treat him truly as the GOAT, greatest of all time, in terms of being a player, I think that leadership style in modern times when coaches and players have choices about where they want to be, I don't think it's going to work as well anymore as maybe it did back then. So for me, not a surprise that Saban's trying to connect himself to that. But when you're looking for evidence and reasons why the Alabama program is quickly moving into the past tense form of the college football conversation, I think it's the similarities between Saban and Jordan that are one of the big reasons why there. It's good to have you on our program. We'll have more on the rest of the SEC later on. But for now, on the latest involving everything going on with UGA, let's talk to John Stinchcomb as part of the Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
We'll get ready to welcome in John Stinchcomb here, former UGA All-American, a great analyst for us here at Dog Nation. John, I hope you had a great weekend, and we appreciate you stopping by to talk some football with us here right now.
I've had a great weekend, and I'm excited about talking about some Bulldog football.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Let me pick up with you where I was discussing with our podcast and video audience a moment ago when it involves the Georgia defense. I'm excited about seeing this group again for this upcoming season. Some of the stuff I've seen online over the last couple of days just adds that, for me. Let me start with what Pro Football Focus was recently kind of touting, the fact that Georgia ranks, at the very top of the country in terms of rushing touchdowns allowed a year ago. That's not just a cool stat. It also speaks to physicality. I think across the country, John, we see physicality in some respects mattering less than it's ever mattered before. Oklahoma's made the college football playoff 3 years in a row, essentially playing a glorified version of 7-on-7 in a pillow fight league, the Big 12. Really, even Alabama, which was once the hallmark of physicality in the SEC, I think over the last couple of years, that's become a less physical team. LSU, I wouldn't say they traded all their physicality for what they did last year with Joe Burrow, but clearly they were thought of and known more for the finesse passing game than they were for the original physicality that maybe Les Miles once made famous there. The fact that Georgia brings back a defense, and for the most part, it brings this defense back intact, bringing back a defense that's known for stopping the line of scrimmage and being very stingy against the run, it's kind of nice to know that Georgia goes against the grain for what is so in vogue around the rest of college football. Would you agree with that?
Yes, but I also think it matches the systems that we're seeing. It's not like the 1980s football with just 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and our defense is able to stop that run game. You're seeing them effective against the new spread offenses that tries to create these seams for the run game. It may not be the old school physicality, two tight ends, lead back with from an I formation that you're stopping the run, but it's still very effective and efficient to see our defense shut down these run games that come from the spread offense, from four wides and a single back formation, to still be able to stuff the run in today's day and time is something that I think sets Georgia apart and a reason for optimism heading into this season, especially considering the number of guys they don't lose.
Honestly, compels me to admit, though, that when I say, hey, it's great how stingy Georgia's rush defense has been, that gives you a chance to win every single game. That said, John, I still want to see this group take that next step in terms of, hey, being more impactful behind the line of scrimmage. When you're not giving up rushing touchdowns, when you're not giving up rushing yards, that tells me you're impactful at the line of scrimmage. But I think the greatest teams in the country, the best teams in the nation, are also impactful behind the line of scrimmage, whether it be tackles for loss or sacks. And admittedly, I do think this Georgia defense still needs to take that step. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think what we've had is a belief in the system. I think we've got guys that are talented that fit into the system, buy into what these defensive coaches are teaching. But we haven't had those playmakers at the point of attack. I'm expecting more from Walker and Nolan and guys that are playmakers right there at the line of scrimmage, more than just 11 guys all on the same page playing good football, which is what we saw in 2019. There wasn't one standout player from that defense. I think you saw that and individual awards. So to find someone to really step up and step out, I think that's what makes the difference between making plays at the line of scrimmage and then stepping that up a little bit and making plays behind.
So let me ask you a question about this. You mentioned the fact that it was seemingly kind of a defense by committee, you know, a lot of guys seemingly making a close to equal contribution a year ago. At times it was difficult to identify who the true best player in the Georgia defense was. Speaking as a fan here for a moment, I guess I'm hoping that's not true in 2020. I guess I'm hoping that a superstar emerges. You know, Roquan Smith obviously did in 2017, and the results spoke for themselves. I would look at guys like Nolan Smith, Trayvon Walker, N'Kobe Dean. I would look at those guys and say, hey, between that trio, maybe somebody really does just explode onto the scene this year. And that's the kind of guy that you see on the CBS graphic before the game or the ESPN graphic, or, the kids are wanting to emulate, however you define kind of superstar status. I guess my belief as a fan is the Georgia defense will be at its best if a superstar type player emerges. Azeez Ojulari is also a great candidate for that as well. How do you feel about that?
Well, again, I think you're starting from a position of strength. I think the defense, you return so many guys that were contributors that were expected and did perform at a high level. To take that up a notch, we're looking for somebody to break out. And you just named a player at every level.
Yeah.
Defensive tackle. Is it Trayvon Walker? Outside pass rusher, edge setter? Is it Nolan Smith in concert with Azeez Ojulari? And then linebackers, I'm expecting N'Kobe Dean. You watch that guy, he runs like a deer, man.
Hey, yeah.
The Notre Dame game last year where tight ends were making big plays, I expect that to kind of be quashed the way that we saw Roquan make plays sideline to sideline. I think N'Kobe has that athletic ability to make plays all across the field. So he's a great place to start. And then in the back end, the return of Richard LeCount, I think, is a big deal. He had that potential to utilize his athleticism, his physicality, and move on to the next level. But I think he was wise in saying he still has more meat on the bone. There's more left on the table for him. And this very well could be the year where you see him be that dynamic playmaker all across the field. So a lot of good potential there.
Let me do one more thing on this topic that we'll move on and talk about something different. If you're okay, I want to have a very candid discussion for a moment. When you look at Georgia's 2018 class, unfortunately right now, John, it's probably more known for who's no longer here than it is for who's currently here. Justin Fields, starting quarterback at Ohio State. Cade Mays, now at Tennessee. Brent Cox, now at Florida. And there's not a ton that Georgia can do about that. That just sort of is what it is. I do think, though, it's really interesting, especially on the defensive side of the ball, the fact that there is plenty of time for some of the guys from that class who are here in Georgia to really make a name for themselves and really kind of change the way that 2018 class is thought of by Georgia fans. I mentioned Quay Walker before you joined us. Now, this could be a big year for him. I believe that it will be a big year for Jordan Davis. I think that Davis has become one of the most important defensive linemen in the SEC. When you talk about good rush defense, Davis is one of the guys that obviously leads the way for Georgia in that regard. Ojulari's name comes to mind here as well. He could be more than just a good player this season. He could be truly a special one. So when you think about Quay, when you think about, you know, Azeez, when you think about, you know, Jordan Davis, those guys, I think, have a chance not only make names for themselves, not only help this team this year, but for Georgia fans who have a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth about the first number one class at Georgia in 2018, about how it's actually materialized on the field, the results of this season could change that feeling as well, I believe.
Well, I think you have to battle against complacency, because all the players, they're good in their own right, and they're contributors and names that we know. But your challenge now is take your game to the next level. For Jordan Davis, I mean, he is a run stuffing Jesse, buddy. He clogs the middle of that defensive line like nobody's business. Now, can you get in better shape and make more plays? Can you stay on the field longer? Can you be a pocket pusher in pass situations? For guys like Quay or Channing, same thing. I mean, we've seen flashes. You've made your little mark on the field. We've seen your number called out in the stadium. But you haven't become that guy. So for that class, here's your opportunity. This is your year. I mean, it happens in college. It happens in the NFL where for the first couple of years, you get your feet wet, you make your contributions, you take your shots. But there comes a point where you need to be the guy. And this is that year for them where, yeah, Brenton Cox, I think that's a big loss. I mean, he was a guy that he flashed and you thought, man, there's potential there. Justin Fields, we've already seen what he's done. Let's change that narrative about what we've lost. And the only people that can do it are the ones that are in-house. So here's your opportunity to have the fan base forget about those that walked out of the door, and let's start talking about the guys that stuck around. And to do that, they have to make plays.
I think that's exactly right. Hey, I know a lot of you during this time of coronavirus lockdown, every day kind of runs into the next. It's hard to know one day from the other. Let me give you a quick PSA just for a moment. This upcoming weekend is Memorial Day weekend, and as we do our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update, it's also a good reminder of the really cool things that Marlowe's got going on as the summer gets ready to begin. We get together with friends, 6 feet apart, of course, but you get together with the friends and get ready to enjoy them. Marlowe's has done a lot of this over the course of the last few weeks, whether it be Mother's Day, cool thing for Easter, whatever else. They're doing a really fun thing for Memorial Day this upcoming weekend there as well. So let me give you the details on this. You want to order yours by Thursday at 5 p.m. So this upcoming Thursday at 5 p.m., get it ordered. You got hummus, wings, the JT Kettle Chips, all kinds of really cool stuff, Tavern Burgers, the Prestige Farms chicken, of course, as well. A lot of really fun stuff to choose from, great menu to select. Get it ordered by 5 p.m. on Thursday. Then you can get ready to enjoy this upcoming Mother's Day weekend. So here's the website to go to. It's marlowestavern.com/memorial-day-2-go. Now, for our video audience, it's a lot easier to read. But let me just say it for podcast radio. marlowestavern.com/memorial-day-to-go with dashes in between every word on Memorial Day to go. You can check that out. The Mother's Day, the Easter, very, very popular, and I know the Memorial Day weekend spread is going to be great there as well. So get yours ordered by 5 p.m. this upcoming Thursday with our friends there at Marlowe's Tavern. By the way, some of these taverns, I believe we may be getting very close to hearing some good news, and some of those getting ready to enjoy some patios here coming in pretty soon there as well. We'll tell you more about that when it is appropriate to do so. Continuing here with John Stinchcomb on our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update for a moment. John, one of the things we've talked about a lot in just the last few days is I think the growing willingness to be skeptical of the Georgia offense on the record by some of the SEC network or national analysts, and the suggestion that opens the door for Florida. We've heard Chris Doering, who I like from the SEC network, saying that. We've heard Danny Cannell, who I don't really like from CBS, kind of saying the same thing. It doesn't bother me necessarily. And in fact, I think there's probably a good thing for Georgia fans to see the offense's feet held to the fire, because I think there is a reason that Georgia has made the offseason changes that it has made. But one in particular that Chris Doering pointed to was the absence of Sam Pittman. That lack of continuity might hurt Georgia. I know you like Matt Luke. We've talked about that a ton. Specifically on the topic of Pittman not being here, first full season for Matt Luke, how much of a hiccup do you think legitimately should be expected from that transition?
I don't see it happening. I really don't. And here's what's funny about these analysts, sitting here talking behind screens, is that's all we can do right now. It's all speculation. It's all, conjecture based on expert analysis. That's just fancy ways of saying we haven't seen the product yet. And right now, Georgia's at the top of the heap. And that's when you're looking at, here are the flaws, here are the chinks in the armor that make them susceptible to these sorts of criticism. In contrast, when you're building up teams like Florida in these scenarios, it's potential and build and optimism. Here's reasons why you should like them. So you see the dichotomy there. Georgia, this is what's wrong with them. Florida, this is what makes them great at this time of year of why this could happen. It's all hot air right now. So there's some legitimacy in that there was turnover and Georgia wasn't a super efficient offense last year. But there's also just as much reason, if not more, to be excited about Georgia's offense than anybody else in that conversation.
Well, let me squeeze in one more on this, and I want to ask you another thing before I let you go here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Updater. I'm a big believer that if you keep doing what you've always done, you'll keep
getting what you've always gotten. And for Georgia offensively, that's been just short of a national championship standard these last few years. However, some people would say because of the weird offseason, no spring practice, uncertain when folks are even getting back to Athens here at this point in time, that whatever changes we might would have seen from Georgia, now we see less of those changes because you don't have enough time to implement them. This is an unfair question because we've never experienced this before, but how much do you think the weirdness of the offseason impedes whatever Georgia was planning on doing with Todd Monken?
I don't think it could come at a worse time for Georgia, candidly. I think you lose your veteran quarterback. You make a transition at the offensive coordinator spot where you need to learn his system and his vernacular and his style. There's so many new pieces in the backfield at wide receiver, changes at the offensive line. This pandemic came at arguably the worst time for Georgia that it could. I think any other year in Kirby's era, except for the first one, the offense would have been better situated to handle this type of adversity. So there's a lot to overcome for this offense. I agree with that. Just because there's so much new, there's so many new moving parts, new coordinator, offensive line coach, positions, skilled positions, your big boys up front. That's a major problem. That's a challenge. So if you're looking for reasons why it might be slow to start with, that's a great reason to put your finger on.
Let me squeeze in one more thing before we let you go. Last night, The Last Dance, the Jordan documentary on ESPN finished up. It's been a long time since I've had a television viewing experience that's been as enjoyable for me as this one is. I've just been fascinated by the entire thing. So well done. My one sentence takeaway on it is Jordan's insatiable appetite for competitive fire, his for competition, really worked for him, made him one of the great winners of all time, but maybe not always that enjoyable for the people around him to be around. And John, what's funny is I've said on this show before that Jordan, as a example of a leadership style, is not a great thing for college football coaches because of the fact that we've got freedom of movement now. Assistant coaches can leave and go take other jobs. Players can transfer and go to other programs. That if you're looking for the best style of leadership for the current version of college football, what Jordan put on display in The Last Dance ain't it. Which is kind of funny because Nick Saban has come out and through Alabama social media saying, boy, this is what I've always loved about Michael Jordan. You know, and basically saying, hey, I'm just like Jordan. I would say some people would say, yeah, Saban kind of has been just like Michael Jordan. Unbelievably successful, not always fun to be around. That's why assistant coaches leave. That's why a lot of Alabama players seemingly had more affection for Scott Cochran than they had for Saban. What do you think of this in terms of if you're trying to build a winner in 2020, how much insatiable competition, win at all costs, can you have? And how much room do you need to leave, like seemingly Ed Orgeron has done a bit, Dabo Swinney has done a bit, I believe Kirby Smart does to a degree, leaving some room for some fun, for some enjoyment of life? What is the proper template for college football, you know, now that we've watched Jordan's leadership style on display the last few Sunday nights?
I think it's so diverse. Those that have found success as to how they approach it. Having been around greatness personally with Drew Brees and, in my opinion, Coach Payton as a player and as a coach, those guys, I mean, Drew's one of the best Hall of Fame quarterbacks to ever play the game. So I've had that firsthand experience with those guys that are passionate and driven and talented. And that's a rare combination to find at least those three ingredients. And you've dialed it all the way up to 10 on each one of those categories. Michael Jordan did it better than anyone. If you're looking at coaches, the closest similarity that I can think of is Bill Belichick in New England, a driven man who's passionate, holds everyone to an exceptionally high standard, and was partnered with great players and personnel around him. And, I have to believe that that kind of passion and drive and focus was matched, but also abrasive at points. And there was friction caused because Tom Brady could be expressed in that same vein. And they didn't have, it doesn't appear, that Phil Jackson, Michael Jordan relationship. Yeah. Where they had the passion, but were yin and yang, so to speak. It seems like they were both yins, you know. So I think you have to find your own lane. But I absolutely believe that you can pull so many different characteristics from great leaders, and having that insight of this series into what made Michael Jordan the best basketball player to ever play the game, I think we can all pull nuggets from.
Let me squeeze in one quick follow-up on that. You mentioned Drew Brees, who you played with. I think a lot of the Bulls players at times didn't see Jordan as a friend. They saw him more as their boss. When it comes to Brees, was he friendlier than that, or was he also the guy that did not shy away from getting in your face during a practice session?
Oh, his personality is very different. Their passion for the game, their commitment to being great and exceptional, their willingness and ability to take on more than just being a position player and a you know, this sounds silly, but a simple leader. I mean, they take more onto their plate and put more on their back than anyone else. Those are the similarities. Now, Drew is one of the most relatable guys that I've ever been around. I mean, he's somebody that you enjoy being with and around and playing beside because they take their game to the next level and push themselves constantly. You feel like you're trying to reach that same standard. But he wasn't the get in your face, chew you up and down, you know, you're letting me down type player. His approach was much different.
John, it's great stuff. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, and thanks for being a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. We'll look forward to catching up with you again very soon.
Always fun. Thanks, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff from John Stinchcomb. I'm going to try to squeeze in a bunch of stories as part of our SEC Through here. Let me just quickly remind you, though, on video, RS Andrews Cooldown every single day. We'll take your comments. It's brought to you by our friends at RS Andrews. They can handle all of your air conditioning, heating, your plumbing, electric needs. You can find them online at rsandrews.com. So Kentucky Sports Radio, Matt Jones, who's, I guess, had his beef with Dog Nation before, which I'm not really a part of, but nonetheless, he had an interesting report that I thought was fairly interesting. That so you've had the athletic directors voting and talking about the possibility of football programs beginning to return on June 1st. But what Matt Jones says is one athletic director spoke out against that happening, arguing that the ban on returning to campus, which currently right now runs through May 31st, should be in place indefinitely, and that is Tennessee's Philip Fulmer. Let me read you just a couple sentences here with Matt Jones from Kentucky Sports Radio. He says, after discussing it with the group, Fulmer proposed the date of June 15th, but many believe that was too late for players to be ready for the start of the season on schedule. From there, the discussion was tabled for next week. The reason why this matters is that when like the more powerful people vote on this, like the presidents, the chancellors, things like that, what Matt Jones is saying is they would have liked a unanimous consensus from the athletic directors about moving on next. Now, I don't believe that June 15th is too late to get ready for a start of a season that doesn't happen until the end of August, early September, but I do understand why they want to do it sooner rather than later. I don't know what Philip Fulmer is up to here, but he's the ultimate careerist, whatever his plan is. Obviously, he sees some sort of personal benefit for himself by doing that. That's just kind of been his track record as Tennessee athletic director and as a head coach prior to that. This is a guy that's always got upward mobility on his mind. So what does any of this mean? I'm not quite sure. I guess I'm just interested to find out that any SEC athletic director right now is currently interested in pumping the brakes and slowing things down after a weekend in which there were a lot of sports. And, you know, the president, I hate to bring politics into this because it always, you know, gets a little tricky, but the president was on the golf telecast on NBC saying that he hoped to see fans in the stands for college football, mention Alabama, LSU by name. It certainly seems like the process of returning to sports is being fast-tracked here, and Philip Fulmer, apparently, according to what Kentucky Sports Radio is reporting, is at least pushing back on that somewhat. This is the same thing I said about Lincoln Riley the other day. Is there a huge difference between June 1st and June 15th? I'm not quite so sure, but it is interesting that Philip Fulmer is interested in slowing things down for a moment. I have been thinking a bit lately about the Auburn quarterback situation and Gus Malzahn as a developer of quarterbacks. There's been some Auburn quarterback news. Aaron McLaughlin, former Auburn quarterback commit, who had decommitted a couple of, month or so ago, he has now landed at NC State, so he finds a new home. Auburn has brought in Demetrius Davis, which was thought to be a quarterback they were interested in. That was predicted that he would land there, and that's indeed what has happened. But I'm also thinking about, you know, what's going on with Jared Stidham, who seems right now like he's going to be the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots. A lot of folks have come out of the woodwork recently, including Cliff Kingsbury, who knew him in the Big 12, saying they think that Stidham's a really good quarterback, is going to do well for the Patriots. Here's my question for you. Is it good for Auburn if he does well for New England, or is it bad? On one hand, you may say it's good because it's just attention for the Auburn program for one of their former players. However, doesn't it also invite questions of why didn't he do more at Auburn? You know, pretty good game against Georgia in 2017, followed that up by beating Alabama. But for the most part, I would say it was an unspectacular career for Stidham wearing an Auburn uniform. And for Gus Malzahn, who enters into a season with all kinds of questions about his own development of his offense and whether he's willing to be hands-off and allow Chad Morris to have some control. What does or doesn't happen with Jared Stidham with the New England Patriots may be a bit of a reflection one way or another on how people feel about Malzahn as an offensive coach right now. Speaking of offensive coaches in the SEC, a former coordinator, Mike Loxley, at Alabama is now head coach at Maryland. And we talked last week about the reports that Nick Saban had tried to prevent Jalen Hurts from transferring to Maryland to work with Loxley or Miami to work with Dan Enos, who was employed there at the time. Apparently, he did not step in, though, to prevent Talia Tungo-Vailoa from going to Maryland. That's indeed what has happened. Tungo-Vailoa going to go work with Loxley there at Maryland. I think it's probably a pretty good landing spot for him. I think that Loxley's probably a pretty good coach. And I think, to go back to what I said before, Nick Saban, kind of that insatiable competitor, a little bit like Michael Jordan, but maybe also not always making a lot of friends for himself along the way, maybe also possibly like Michael Jordan. This may be another example of that, where how happy is Saban going to be if Tungo-Vailoa goes to Maryland and has a good time and enjoys himself with Loxley? Something tells me Saban might not necessarily love that and will make that your SEC through. And as we wrap up today, don't forget what I told you earlier. Back on Wednesday in our Dog Nation World Headquarters Studios for Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door. Cannot wait to be doing that. I'm really excited about that. Just a lot of fun. So looking forward to that on Wednesday to be back in our studios. By the way, make sure you check out DogNation.com. The attorney for DeAndre Baker, and obviously know the Baker story, we touched on that last week, dealing with some pretty serious accusations stemming from what it looks like a card game gone wrong. At least that's the first blush in all this. Attorney pushing back heavily on these charges, so maybe we'll see some more twists and turns of this story. For those of you interested in following that, you can do so at DogNation.com. Something I know you're interested in? How about a Gator Hater Updater? 1,297 days. Long time since Florida's beaten Georgia. We love telling you that. And we'll see you back here tomorrow morning for Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door. Y'all have a great day, everybody.